when we think about purpose, we're right now we're giving teams tools themselves to mm-hmm. think about, okay, why are we here? What are we doing together? How can we develop a joint roadmap? And again, in the spirit of this is now your company, putting the accountability on everyone on the team to really think through, am I personally aligned with this? Or what changes do I need to make? So trying to sort of make the manager more of a participant in that team versus command and control, let me tell you guys how to work.
Welcome to the IDOU Creative Confidence Podcast, a series focused on building your confidence at work to tackle your biggest creative challenges.
Join us as we learn insights and lessons straight from IDEO and today's most impact-oriented design thinking leaders.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Gibbs Howard.
And I'm Kalita Stafford.
To introduce Bryn, she is a fabulous person who is doing all sorts of work on the modern workplace and how to keep employees engaged, especially in a super high-tech company like Facebook, where you have 30,000 people all around the globe, and you're literally serving a third of the population of the world. So over 2 billion people using Facebook and all of the sub-brands within. So an amazing amount of scale. And so we want to talk about a recent article that she's published on motivation in the modern workplace. And it was a really interesting piece because you were taking like a classic framework that most people know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and then thinking about what's shifting in the modern workplace. So I wonder if you could tell us a bit about how you started looking at this.
Sure. So we looked at, you know, Maslow's hierarchy, and, you know, that's something that's been around for about 75 years. It came into play at a time when work was really different than it is now. So, you know, 75 years ago, people were working in really industrial organizations. There were very basic needs that had to be met, safety, security. And around the globe, you know, there are still, those needs still exist. But when you look at the shift to knowledge work, you know, the needs are really different. Safety and security are really a given in a lot of knowledge organizations. And we didn't feel like the hierarchy really made sense anymore, that like you had to get to like level 2 to get to level 3 to reach self-actualization. Like it felt too linear, and we just didn't feel like it was going to resonate for our population. So we decided to do a broader study to try to understand motivation at Facebook. And we looked at the engagement survey data that we have. We run a survey twice a year and tried to understand, like, is there a hierarchy or are there just simply, you know, areas that are really important to everybody? And we did the research to try to understand what matters most so that we can attract and retain, you know, the best possible people to help build community in the world.
Yeah.
So what we heard, what we learned was there were three things that were sort of equally important. So there wasn't a hierarchy anymore. Mm-hmm. And there were really three categories of traits that were important. The first was career. The second was cause or having a purpose that is mm-hmm. important. And then the third was community. And we saw that those were sort of equally important across the board. 90% of our population said that at least two were really important, and 75% said three.
Also, there's so much work going on about millennials and how different they totally. Are. And you saw, what did you find with millennials?
Really minimal differences across. So, I mean, my personal view has been millennials have gotten kind of a bad rap in the world, right? Like, millennials have a hard time. And I don't think it's always really fair or justified. Yeah. And so we were actually really pleased to see that, you know, there were some minor differences, which you can read about in the article. But generally, millennials answered questions and sort of had the same needs as every other population we looked at.
Yeah, they're people too.
So
we want to dive into each of the topics. Yeah. So I know career is really most relevant to the things that we're talking about today, and certainly deepest relevance. I know Facebook is doing experiments and really pushing forward boundaries of how this happens in the workplace. But when you talk about career, you could just kind of define it for us and then talk about some of the interesting things that you do at Facebook to engage people positively on their path.
You bet. Career, you know, is super important. When we look at our data, the things that really relate to having a positive career are having the autonomy that you need to have in your job, to work in the way that works for you. Being in a job that plays to your strengths. So for folks who aren't familiar with the concept of strengths, it's the idea of being in a job that both you love doing and you're good at doing. Mm-hmm. So there's a passion piece of that that's really important. And then obviously having some sense of what might be next, where you might go next as you evolve your journey. When we look at our data, strengths is the most important message that comes out. People being in jobs that they really want to do is the single most important thing when it comes to, you know, productivity, when it comes to performance, when it comes to retention and engagement. So, you know, that I can share a couple things that we're doing.
Yeah, I know one of the things you brought for us. So we always love to share tips and tricks that people can run off and use right away. And so one of the things you talked about that you've been helping to design and working with teams to design is the intake conversation. So a new employee joins Facebook.
Yep.
Or they're, even when you're interviewing with people, what are some of the kinds of questions that leaders and peers can ask people to kind of start to strike a chord on these things of cause and community and career?
You bet. So, you know, building a career is a super individualized thing. I think one thing that's new in the world of work is like people aren't, you know, there isn't like a, I'm going to become a manager and then a senior manager and then a director and then a senior director, you know, linear path anymore. So we're really looking to teach our managers to deeply understand their people as individuals so they can really design customized careers. So the pilot that you referenced is we're looking at something we're calling an entry interview. So this is the idea of having a set of questions that we can give to managers as they're hiring new people. And in their first one-on-one, so the first time they sit down with a new hire, asking a consistent set of questions that help them understand the person both as a person and as a professional. So basic things like, you know, tell me about what you want to get out of this job. What are you really excited about? You know, what do you want to learn in this job?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can I specifically help you? And so these sound really basic, but what we've learned is that it's not always intuitive for managers to start there and to go really deep right away. So by giving them a set of questions that they can, you know, start with, it can just help them get a deeper understanding of their person.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I see constantly, and I'm working on myself all the time, is that it's so easy when you have a new hire. You're just like, sweet, we've got this person in, let's get you up to speed. And we have so much to tell you versus making sure that those initial conversations would set the stage for so much of the relationship. Start with understanding them as deeper human beings and understanding their passions and what they want to do with their work, which is such an interesting and important subtle flip.
I would add one thing too, like even before they get into that entry interview, and this is something that's been, you know, widely written about Facebook, but I share it because it's important.
Yeah.
We really screen for strengths when we're hiring people. So like one of the classic interview questions we give people is like, you know, tell me about a day. If you were to look back on a day at work and say, that was the best day I ever had. I loved every minute of today. Like, what did you do? Did you write? Did you code? Did you present something? Did you sit by yourself and research? Like, what did you do? And then really looking to make sure that the content of the job matches the answer to that question. So we really start looking for that sort of career orientation very, very early on.
So interesting. Well, one more thing that I can't help but ask on this. So I think the other side of customizing careers, the kind of shadow side of that is entitlement, right? And I know at Facebook, again, another thing you're very known for is how much employees have access to. You know, it's like your haircut and your food and your shoe shine and your video, you know, all these things.
Yeah.
So if you are, if people are expecting a career to be customized and play to their strengths, how do you counterbalance that so that it doesn't become a downward spiral of expectation and entitlement?
You know, in Silicon Valley, it's a really competitive talent market and companies are offering a lot. And we also know that, you know, people come into work these days often wanting to have, you know, things set up for them. They want to know what's next. They want to know what their career is going to look like. So there are a couple of ways to think about it. The first thing is that, you know, even when we think about our product, we think about sort of mitigating the bad and amplifying the good. And so, like, I think with entitlement, you can, you could choose to mitigate the bad, but I think it's more powerful to amplify the good.
Yeah.
So how do you cultivate a sense of gratitude? We've done basic things like we have vending machines where people can get IT resources. And we put some little handmade thank you notes in those vending machines to just like make it really aware for people, you know, every day, every week when they're trying to get a supply that like, hey, you could also say thank you to somebody.
Yeah. There's a human being behind that vending machine taking care of it. Yeah.
And so like, thank someone. And we also have a lot of sort of public thanking tools internally. And so we're really trying to push gratitude first.
Yeah.
The second thing that I would say is, we've had a long culture of ownership. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this comes with being a startup, right? You're a startup. Everyone is an owner of the company. Mm-hmm. And we've tried to hang on to that even as we've grown. And so when people come into Facebook on the first date, into orientation, they see a sign on the wall, a hand-painted sign that says, "This is now your company."
Huh. Nice.
And all the way through, like all the way through orientation and their experience, we're really trying to reinforce, like, what if this was your company? What if you owned 100% of this company and you were the CEO? What kind of behavior would you want people to have? Mm-hmm. What kind of decisions would you want people to make? And we've seen that for people who really understand that, they're often, you know, making decisions that are really good for Facebook and cultivating the kind of environment that we want. So
yeah.
I would say those aren't perfect solutions. Yeah. Like entitlement will always be a thing mm-hmm. when you're offering so much. But really trying to double down on gratitude and a sense of ownership have helped.
So interesting. Yeah. How does this work around the globe mm-hmm. or when you have a distributed team?
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of these conversations and questions happen just – I think so many times we think of a barrier there because right. somebody's not physically with you. But these kinds of intimate conversations sometimes I find happen best when people are – on the phone and can really concentrate on the conversation instead of maybe just being distracted by other things. But do you see any shifts in things with the kinds of questions you encourage managers to get into with a new hire if their person's not physically co-located with them?
Sure. I mean, I think when people aren't co-located, really getting the basics right is important. So things like making sure you're getting really deep in that first one-on-one and talking to people who aren't in your office about how they want to communicate, when they work, what's going on in their lives, like really getting an understanding of what's going on for them is even more important. You know, we're also lucky. We use Workplace, which is Facebook's enterprise product for work. Yeah. So, you know, I think that does help bridge employees even across boundaries because people are collaborating in one space together. And there are lots of tools out there that you can use, but having some sort of online platform does help. But I would say, you know, the biggest key for managing people remotely is personalization and making sure that you're not treating every single person the same and assuming that they all want and need the same things and are working the same way, but getting really clear about how people work and live and want to work with you.
Yeah. I think that definitely for myself, when I think about early managing of people, I really thought like, this is great. We have more people who can do the things that I think are really important. And that was just a shocking learning for me in the early days of management, just kind of saying, no, that's not at all how it works, especially in a creative organization and a contemporary workplace where it's much more about what does the collective want to do and how do we align our common goals in the right direction for the company.
Sure, I'm sure that's something you guys do all day long.
There was a great quote, with leadership is the art of getting someone else to do something you want done because he or she wants to do it. It's a Dwight Eisenhower quote. And so as we start to turn the corner and talk about not just career, but cause, how important do you think it is to align with other people's causes and how do you bring their causes in with the cause of Facebook?
Sure. Yeah. This, I mean, today's world of work and I would argue like the world of work was never one of like, I tell you this and you will do it wholeheartedly, right? I mean, people are people and they have their own needs and desires. So for us, purpose is super important. I mean, Facebook is a mission-driven company. We hire people. So I would back up and say we kind of think about purpose on a couple levels. We think about company. So are people on board with Facebook as a company? Do they want to bring the world closer together? Do they want to build community in the world? That's sort of like an absolute requirement to entry.
Yeah.
Then we think about purpose at the team level and then purpose at the individual level. Mm-hmm. And so in an ideal world, those are all quite connected.
Yeah.
I think probably the most powerful intersection for people to think about is at the team level because that's really where company and individual come together and it's a smaller group of people trying to work together. So we're really focused on teams right now. We're trying to sort of democratize teamwork. If you think historically about how people used to like work in teams, it was like, okay, there's my manager. My manager's going to tell us all what to do and divide our work and like watch over us.
Yeah.
And the manager still serves a really important role. But I think the entire team has the power to sort of activate. So when we think about purpose, we're giving teams tools themselves to think about, okay, why are we here? What are we doing together? How can we develop a joint roadmap? And again, in the spirit of this is now your company, putting the accountability on everyone on the team to really think through,
yeah,
am I personally aligned with this? Or what changes do I need to make? So trying to sort of make the manager more of a participant in that team versus command and control, let me tell you guys how to work.
Yeah, and that's something that we've seen across all sorts of teams that people often think it's got to be from the tippy top down, whether it's the tippy top of the company or the tippy top of the team. But we've been fascinated to see purpose conversations can bubble up from leadership in the broadest sense. So somebody who just cares about that, who's thinking about it. Yes, of course, it's great to bring the senior members of the team into that conversation, but it's not always led from the usual suspects. Right. So super interesting. Yeah. And so when you think about team level purpose and cause, are there any tips or things that you guys do that you can share to help kind of grease the gears for those conversations to happen?
Sure. Well, I'll give two ideas. I mean, I think the first one is when we're hiring people, really getting clear about like what makes them tick and what's important to them is critical. You know, if the hiring manager is interviewing them, really looking for that alignment is important. One of the things that some of our teams do that I think could work is write vision statements. So this has been much more effective on the sales side. But one of our sales leaders herself went through a process of writing her own vision for like what she wanted from her life, what she wanted from her work, what she needed from her team. It's like a really actively wrote it down. And it was so powerful for her that she shared it with the rest of the teams. So now a lot of the sales teams actually take a dedicated day of their time and write down, like, this is my vision for my life and my vision for our work together, and share them within the team.
Yeah.
So I think, again, in the spirit of personalization and not expecting that every person is going to achieve purpose the same way, giving people the space to be thoughtful about what they need and then creating the safe environment for people to share that back, I think can really help the team gain alignment. So again, like, it's not done universally at Facebook, but for those teams, it's been a really powerful tool.
Yeah, I think that's such a common refrain that we hear is like, how do you help the individual have just enough time and space to be in touch with their own needs? I think we see that all the time, that somebody, especially maybe in the early, all stages of career path, they come in, they're so wed to the goals of the company.
Right.
Sometimes they have trouble defining what it is that they want. And so just kind of showing that out, saying it is appropriate to take some time and space, you know, not necessarily like
not weeks
all,
and weeks.
All time, years and years, but like an afternoon, and spend some time reflecting and sharing that out so that people feel trust.
Yep.
It's wonderful. But I wanted to talk about the third theme in the article that you authored. So community. So community is the epicenter of everything that Facebook and all of your sub-brands do. How do you think about community in the workplace, and what are some of the things you do?
Sure. You know, this is a newer focus for us. Obviously, when we kind of, as a company, switched our mission to focus on community more concretely, we've really looked at it internally, and our data are telling us that it's important. So we are doing a couple things. We're number one, asking regularly how people are feeling on things like a sense of belonging. Do they feel like they have a sense of support? Do they feel like they can be themselves at work, to really understand that moving forward? And then we're trying to build better resources to make sure people have a sense of community in a way that works for them. Often that's work. So like the team, you know, when we ask people about communities, usually their work team is sort of the first place that they go. And we really hope that that's true, right? Because that's where you're spending the most time. And then working with managers to make sure they understand how to breed, you know, a sense of inclusion and a sense of community on their team. We also know that people want to connect in all different ways, especially if you look across the globe in offices that are smaller and more distributed. Sometimes people want to connect over personal interests. So we use Workplace, and we have something called Clubs, and we sort of have a set of things that people can join based on their interests. Things
what are
like,
some of the more extreme ones?
I mean, there's like bread making at Facebook. There are obviously parents groups. Running groups. There's like, I think dogs at Facebook is like a really popular one. I'm not a dog owner, but it's like, you know, people are really into this. So I do think that like being, you know, there's huge power in being able to connect personally.
Yeah.
And that does translate into, you know, how you're doing professionally. So we encourage it. But we know that for a lot of people, the place where they find the deepest sense of belonging is often on their team.
Yeah. And that is something that also works well, even if you're on a distributed team.
For sure. It's
important. Certainly, I know that's one of the threads. Certainly the parenting network at IDEO, but also certain theme groups and communities just keep the conversation going all day and night.
Totally.
Through different forums. So.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, this is about like being able to see people as people, which as crazy as it sounds, like I still think that is new in the world of work for some organizations. And I think that especially when you're looking at distributed work and people coming from all sorts of backgrounds, like really giving them the space to be themselves in whatever way that means for them and their culture is critical to.
Yeah, that brings me to another question that was sent in advance from Claire O'Leary in New Zealand. And she was asking about issues of diversity and equity and how do you ensure that the workplace can make that wide range of people or make the space for them to feel comfortable. And I know this is an area of passion for you, supporting diversity and something you write about and think about. What are some of the things that, I mean, I understand having open channels.
Yep.
But have you ever had a situation, I'm sure, where somebody gets shut down or there isn't trust for those conversations? How do you support openness and equity and diversity?
You bet. I mean, it's a huge focus right now for us. It's a huge focus in the tech industry. And, and I think globally it's a huge focus. I mean, I think as the conversations are getting more and more heated around the globe, like that's going to translate into the workplace. And so a couple things that we're working on, I mean, we're trying to first just be really on air with the leaders around a culture of support. We've also, you know, we teach people how to talk to each other. We're trying to give people actually concrete language to use when they're trying to bring up difficult topics. And, you know, give them, you know,
what's an example?
Like an example, instead of saying something like, that's a bad idea because of X, Y, and Z, and here's my idea. It could be like, actually, like, I'm sure you thought of this, but in case you haven't, I just wanted to suggest X, Y, and Z, right? Yeah. So it's like these fine-tuned changes that you can make and how people can communicate can really, really help
so
people just feel comfortable
down.
And not feel shut down.
Yeah.
The other thing that we're doing is, and we're doing this externally as well with the product, and we've adapted it internally. So there are group admins. If you look at like how Facebook groups work, and because a lot of our work does happen online, there are admins of each group. This happens externally. I'm sure you have it for your parents' groups. Obviously, we have them for internal groups. And so we do heavy training with those admins that we've actually taken sort of from our externally facing groups product team and trained our internal admins about how to create, you know, healthy discourse and how to make sure that they're keeping these groups safe and supportive.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah. That's
so
a whole, that's like a newer piece of work and it's pretty fascinating and it's super important.
At IDEO and IDEOU, we're always thinking about creativity, better creative problem solving. And I know one of the big things that you need are all of these supports for the right conditions to exist. So diversity of voices. And I'm wondering when you think Facebook is such an innately creative company, what are some things that you're thinking about with these layers of motivation and creating space for creativity?
Sure. I mean, I think that the biggest challenge we have when it comes to creativity is really space and having white space to think. You know, Facebook moves really fast. The tech industry is moving fast. And I think that we've got to carve out ways to create that space. So that's going to look different for everybody. One of the things that some of our tech teams do, which is helpful, is something called No Meeting Wednesdays. So they'll try to like, I don't know, do you have this?
We have No Meeting Friday.
Okay.
And it is my favorite.
Different day.
I didn't believe it would work.
Yeah.
But it is awesome.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so I think just like, so that's not perfect. I would say like, yes, meetings sometimes happen on No Meeting Wednesdays. Yeah. Some teams don't do it. But for the teams that do, giving yourself that space to go deep on something is just hugely powerful. Mm-hmm. So I think that can really breed creativity. Another thing is just being exposed to different types of projects. So as we like kind of go back to these three areas, if we think back to career, and career is not necessarily being linear and not being like manager, senior manager, how can we actually give people exposure to projects that helps them be able to learn in different ways and grow? The most concrete example we have of this is we've got something called Hack a Month on the engineering side. So engineers, because their skill sets are so transferable, they can go and, you know, make an agreement with their current team that their work is covered, mm-hmm. join another team. I'm sure this happens at IDEO all the time with designers. Same thing.
Yeah, it's so challenging to work out the logistics. Right. But when it happens, it is so important,
right? Because you can just stretch your brain in a totally different way. Yeah. And so we are working through, like, how do you do that on the business side when people are mm-hmm. in jobs where skill sets can be more specialized? So really trying to think through, like, how can we just give people exposure to different ideas to really, you know, expand their thinking?
Yeah, yeah. I think things like that, like cross-training and being able, mm-hmm. I know one of the things that you and I have enjoyed talking about is just how things are shifting when you have a more contemporary, flatter organization and journeys are more mm-hmm. crisscrossy, you know, and crooked mm-hmm. in the most wonderful sense. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that mean for expectations and lifelong learning and all of these kinds of lateral experiences that come together? Wonderful.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you, Bran.
Sure,
it's
thank
a pleasure
you.
Pleasure to have you on. We are just constantly here to support learning and growth and greater creativity and innovation in the modern workplace. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Creative Confidence from IDEO-U. Stay up to date on our Creative Confidence conversations and send your questions for our upcoming guests. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram and sign up for our IDEO-U newsletter at IDEOU.com/CC. Thanks for joining us.